Welcome, this is Suzanne Toro, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We have special guest Mel Fabregas from Veritas, and he has agreed to so kindly sit in the interviewee seat and share with us his experiences from starting Veritas, extraterrestrial, paranormal, and some sagely words of wisdom. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Mel as much as I did. Mel, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate you taking the time.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
And where I'd like to dive in today is, one, for the listeners that aren't familiar with your work, if you can share your seed inspiration for Veritas and how it's grown and where you see it going from here.
Well, the inspiration came many, many years ago, but it was very dormant. And the reason why it was very dormant is because I was, like many people who may be listening, were part of the Matrix at one point. And we always thought, we always knew there were answers outside the Matrix, but we just didn't know how to get out of it. And I can't say that I'm fully out of it. I'm trying every week when I do my shows to get out of it more and more. But essentially, ever since I was a child, I grew up a Catholic, went to Catholic school, and I was told what to think, what to ask, what to say. And that never was the right thing for me. I knew there was something outside. So I went to college, then I started talking about UFOs, and of course, you get frowned upon, you get the ridicule factor, the giggle, and then you stop talking once again. But as you get older and you start looking up at night at the sky and looking at the stars, and I moved to Arizona many years later in the late 90s, and I said to myself, just it's impossible that we're alone, that if there's a God, that God created just one speck of sand with life. And one thing led to another, and one night, and I've said this story many times, but some of your listeners may not know it, I had a dream one night, and the dream essentially said, take action, take action. And I woke up in the morning thinking, what was that all about? Take action. And I hardly watched TV. I never put the subliminal tube anymore. So I turned it on that day for some reason, and I saw this man called Milton Torres, who was a former Air Force pilot, who in the 1950s was ordered to shoot down a UFO while he was stationed in England. And I said to myself, this is an Air Force person who kept that secret for 50 years. And I kept switching channels because they only had him for a couple of minutes every time. And I thought, this is one of the greatest stories I've ever heard. I need to interview this person. And don't ask me how, I was able to find his telephone number less than 10 minutes after. And I decided to give him a call. And my wife was passing by. And I said, hey, I need to create a name for a show, because I'm going to call this man and I need to have, something formal. Otherwise, she's going to think that I'm just a lunatic calling him. And she said, how about Veritas? And I thought, well, that's a great name. So I proceeded to call Milton Torres. And I said, I'm Mel from Veritas. And I would love to do an interview with you. And he said, sure, let's do it tomorrow. So the next day I interviewed him, or actually it was more of a conversation. I wanted it more as a souvenir for me. And I decided to upload it on the web, post it on a few forums. And less than 24 hours later, I received hundreds and hundreds of emails from people saying, when is the next show? And I said to myself, show? Probably they heard the part Veritas and they thought this was really a show. So the next day, I get a call from Stephen Bassett. Some of your listeners may know who he is. And he said, can I please have Dr. Torres' telephone number and contact information, because I'd like to have him on the X conference. And I said, sure, but how about if you grant me an interview? And that's when I did the interview with Stephen Bassett. That's the one that formalized it all. I created a website, and then people just started joining and joining. And now every week we go through a different journey that continues to transform and evolve everybody who listens. And I always thought this was cliche, but it's true. I've been transformed. And a lot of my listeners write to me all the time saying that they're not the same ever since they started listening. So I guess it's creating an impact to the people who listen, fortunately.
Definitely. There are several of you out there that have been gathering data, and my hope is to start connecting some dots so we can move through this transition gracefully.
Yeah.
And so that's why this topic of having our minds shattered, because you, more than likely, even though you had this sense, your mind was shattered several times as you went down the road and unplugged from the matrix, especially from the Catholic Church,
yeah,
or at least the belief system. Mm-hmm. So what, for you, as you've been gathering and connecting with all these different beings on an overall arc, how would you say that you have been able to discern fact from fiction, and where does your belief system lie right now, in particular with the extraterrestrials, just in an overall arc, and we'll dive in a little deeper.
But before I tell you about the extraterrestrial, I don't use the word belief or believe, because to me, believe is to take something for granted without any proof whatsoever. And that comes all the way back from religious days. So now my slogan is Carl Sagan's slogan: I don't want to believe, I want to know.
Yeah.
So a lot of people ask me, hey, did you believe this guest or did you believe that guest? And, you know, some people may get offended when I say, I don't believe anyone. Mm-hmm. I simply present, go to a restaurant, you see a buffet, you have all the several items. You decide which item to choose, you decide which item to take and to try, and if you don't like it, you just don't have it. But don't tell the restaurant owner not to have the items there, because it's important to consider everything. And it lies upon us to use discernment. And the discernment part is the one that this aspect of my life is what I've been developing for the last 3 years. And now when I talk to somebody, I tend to sense more who's telling the truth and who's not. Sometimes you have somebody who's telling you 95% truth and maybe 5% that's not true. And as we all know, half a truth is a lie. But it's important to always be presented all the information, no matter how ridiculous, no matter how outlandish the information might be. I want to consider it all. It's very important.
I agree, and well said. Being that vessel is really important, so I thank you for doing that. And the component about someone 95% truth, which we'll go into a little bit deeper, is that they, on whatever level, something I've been getting a lot, is like every story is valid, because if someone truly believes it, or, you know, that word belief, or knows it to be true because of their experience, how do we dispute
right.
it? So thank you for saying that. So as you've gone through this level of learning discernment, where does your overall view stand in relationship to extraterrestrial life forms?
Well, first of all, as I said at the beginning of the interview, all you have to do is look up and look at the billions and billions of stars. And to me, it is impossible to even fathom that we are alone in the universe. It's the height of arrogance when anybody tells you there's no proof that there's life outside of the planet. Well, how about if you show me proof that there's no life? You know, people just can't show me the opposite. So, you know, I have talked to so many people, and again, you know, I don't use the word belief, and they have told me stories of interaction with extraterrestrial beings and even, you know, traveling to those worlds. Again, I don't have any proof. It's just a gut feeling that this is true. They are among us. They have been here from the beginning of time. And essentially, in my opinion, they're just observing the evolvement and the evolution of humankind. Now, the question is, why haven't they made more of a an overt presentation to humans. And apparently it's because there's a group on this planet that wants to keep the lie, that wants to keep us enslaved, that wants to keep us in this prison planet, as Alex Jones says. And our job as light workers, if you want to call it that way, as truth seekers, is to slowly bring the walls down so that in the future, the presence of extraterrestrial life on this planet, and perhaps we are all, in a way, extraterrestrials. At one point, we were seeded to be part of this planet, this farm we call planet Earth. But this is where I stand today. I continue searching for more information, and hopefully in the future. And many people say, do you think disclosure will ever happen? And I know the question that they're asking is, are the governments of the world, or is the United States government ever, will it ever disclose the presence of extraterrestrial life on the planet? And my answer to that is always absolutely, pardon me, no. Absolutely no. Because those in control are in control because they're addicted to that control. And if you're addicted to something, it's very difficult to shake that addiction. Why would they relinquish control? So if we ever get a government saying, yes, there is extraterrestrial life and we have been in contact with them and we can see the ships, in my strong opinion, it will be a false flag event. It will be an action given to us in order to unite the world. And we have to be very, very watchful and be, you know, on the day that this happens. Because I think disclosure will come at a grassroots level. And people like you, people like me, people like other researchers that continue to be in touch with those seeking the truth.
Right. And is it possible that, or from those that you've spoke to, that the government isn't at liberty to disclose?
Yes, absolutely. The government's not at liberty to disclose because in this world, many people say, oh, the New World Order is coming. The New World Order has been here for decades. The governments of the world are nothing but puppets. And I know to some people I sound a little bit conspiratorial when I say this, but this is not conspiracy. This is fact. As a matter of fact, the show I'm doing this week talks about the Hydra that rules the United States and perhaps the the world. In the United States, the Federal Reserve rules the United States. Governments do as they say, and the corporation. I mean, who really rules the world? We have the oil companies. If you have a person, and I know a few, who have come up with perpetual motion machines, or Professor John Searle and the SEG machine that he has, there's no funding. And if there's ever funding, they give you funding while you're working on your product. Once you have a working model, it just stops and you cannot bring it to market. So that's the oil companies will be completely jeopardized if there's a free energy machine. If you have somebody talking about alternative cures, and I do all the time, then you have the pharmaceutical companies, a $1 trillion industry. There's no money in free energy. There's no money in cures. So they want to just address the symptom. Cancer, for example. When you take somebody out of cancer, that's about $800,000 that the medical, insurance, and pharmaceutical industry loses. So when you find cures for these, they're jeopardized, and that's when they target you. And then you have the military, industrial, congressional, pharmaceutical, penitentiary complex. It's all a business. The planet Earth is ruled by the corporation. And if anybody says that one day we're going to have a new world order, it's already here. It's all interlinked.
Definitely. They might be thinking of a new world order, too. That's what I think they're thinking of.
Yes.
So with it now, have you yourself had any interactions with extraterrestrial?
That's a very good question. Well, first of all, I had never seen a UFO until last year. And you probably have heard of the East City Ranch, James Gilliland's ranch, and Dr. Brooks Agnew. I had Dr. Brooks Agnew on the show about a year and a half ago, and he told me of his experience up there. And he compelled me so much that I had to make my trek up to Washington. And I saw my first UFO last year. It was undeniable. I went there with a skeptical mind, very open-minded. And this light in the horizon, I saw it coming. It was pink. And I just, in my mind, said to myself, please, show me something. Give me some proof that you are indeed what I think you are. As it's approaching me, as it's going over my head, it slowed down and it powered up in a golden aura. And almost as if saying, there you have it. Now you know. And boom, it just left. And thankfully, my friend John Kelly, a professional videographer, filmed it and I could show the world. Because I never talk about my experiences unless I can prove them. Then I went back again this year and we saw so many UFOs. But interaction per se, that I know of, no. However, in 1993, I was living in Mexico City. My company had transferred me there. Prior to that, I was living in Miami. And at 11:30 p.m., the house alarm would always go off at 11:30 p.m. And I was getting tired because every time, you know, I was thinking, what? Somebody's knocking on the door. And I would go downstairs and look, and the motion detector was being triggered in my bedroom as if something's happening in my window. And I got so tired of it that one day I just disconnected the alarm completely. So I said, okay, what could happen? At 11:30 p.m. that night, I heard as if someone is banging the stairway railing with a piece of metal, like bing. And I jumped out of bed, went running to the stairway, touched it, and it was vibrating. And I said, okay, the alarm is gone. Now this. Then I went to live in Mexico City. I moved to this after living in a hotel. Nothing happened, but I moved to this apartment. And at 11:30 p.m. one night, I opened my eyes. I was sleeping, and it was so cold. And I see the windows open and the curtains flapping. And I said to myself, maybe I left the windows open. So I locked the windows. Next day, I come back home. The windows closed. I'm sleeping. 11:30 p.m., don't ask me how, the window opened again and the curtains started flapping. At that point, I said to myself, either I'm going crazy or somebody's trying to communicate with me. I went to the office. I hardly slept that night. I was hiring people that day. And then this lady, who looked like a witch, no offense to witches out there, you're all good, but this lady looked like a witch. I interviewed her. And I don't know why I hired her on the spot. I usually took days before I hired somebody. But to that person, I just hired her on the spot. And at the end of the interview, she said to me, sir, are you all right? And I thought, well, I just met you. Why would you be asking me a personal question? Well, you seem a little bit distraught. And I don't know why I felt tempted to tell her what was going on. And she said, may I borrow your pocket pen and I'll bring it back in the morning? And I said, okay, sure. So I gave her the pocket pen. And the next day, she came and started telling me things about my past that nobody knew but me. To make a long story short, we became friends. And she was a very special person. She would always predict things about people. And then one day, she came to the office in the morning and came to the office crying. And I said, well, what's wrong, Amalia? That was her name. And she says, I'm crying because you're leaving. You're leaving Mexico. And I said, why? I'm happy here. I love my job. I love being here and teaching people. And she said, you'll receive a phone call from somebody in the next few days, and you will be leaving the country. Well, a couple of days later, the devaluation in Mexico had happened three times. My boss called me at home that one night and said, hey, I think we need to take you out of the country. And I said, yes. The next day, I go to the office. Nobody knew about the call but me. She says, you get your phone call, didn't you? And I said to myself, you always do these things. So she says, you're going to be leaving, and I have a few things to tell you. I have a letter, which she never gave me the letter, by the way. But she said, here's a red pouch. She gave me a red pouch with some what looked to be stones inside. She says, keep this with you all the time. Don't ever open it, because if you open it, things are going to start turning sour. So I got the red pouch, and she said, you're going to lose a next of kin in the next few months. At the time, I hadn't lost anybody in my family. Well, my father passed away a few months later. Mm-hmm. She says, you're going to be living, you're going to be moving around the world, and you're going to be ending up in a place that's very warm, and it's very beautiful, it has a lot of nature around it, but it's very warm. Well, I went around the world, and I ended up in Tucson, Arizona, and you've been here, so you know that that's exactly the description. She said, you're going to marry somebody that looks like this, and you're going to be a businessman, you're going to leave the corporate world and then become self-employed, but most importantly, your ultimate goal will be to inform the world. Hmm. And I say, wait, Amalia, I get it all. It sounds so logical to me that it's going to be, you know, you're going to get married, you're going to have children, you're going to be a businessman. That could happen to anybody. But informing the world, and she said, in due time, it will be revealed to you. Some people have told me that this person came to my life because she said to me, somebody's trying to communicate with you, and that's why I'm here. You need to open up. You need to meditate, which is something I haven't been able to accomplish until this day because I always fall asleep. But some people have told me that this person was probably an extraterrestrial who came here for that purpose. When I left to California, I arrived on Monday. I called the office to say hello to Amalia and to tell her that I arrived okay. They said she never came back. So I called her at home. Her phone was disconnected. So even to this day, I'm still wondering why she was presented to me in this life and in this plane. You're asking me if I've ever had contact with an extraterrestrial. This is probably the closest I've ever been to somebody who I suspect was not from this neighborhood.
Right. And let's talk about that a little bit, because a lot of people were led by mainstream media B-movies from the 1950s to think of flying saucers and the Greys as what an ET is. And I have a shaman friend, he's Inca lineage and is an archaeologist, and he's had encounters similar to this where the beings come in, whether female or male form, and that you can't tell the difference. However, he said there's books drawn, I haven't seen it myself, but he has seen it, of the different beings that are on this planet that are from outside our Earth planet, I should say. They're from another planetary system. Mm-hmm. And they come and they communicate. For people to think that we're going to see maybe a bunch of Greys coming down on the planet and talking to us, they might want to think again that they might already be communicating with extraterrestrial life forms.
Absolutely. And we, once again, we use the term Grey so generically because we had the you know, Close Encounters, and we've had E.T., and we have some of the other movies. If we start believing everything that Hollywood tells us, and indeed, Hollywood sometimes mixes truth with fiction because that's exactly what the powers that want to be want.
Right.
They, you know, you take Star Trek, you take Stargate, and I have a very interesting story about Stargate. I saw the movie many, many years ago, but a few months ago, I was supposed to interview somebody that week, and the person called me on Sunday evening saying, hey, I'm really sick. I'm not going to be able to do the interview this week. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll need to find somebody the next day. That night, I started watching Stargate Universe, not to go out on a tangent, but you'll see why it's important. And I started watching Stargate Universe, who I'd never watched any of the TV Stargate series. So I start watching it, and I'm thinking, wow, what a great series. I mean, this ancient ship, these people get into the ancient ship, and they start going towards the sun. They're getting ready to die, thinking they're going to just crash into the sun, when actually the ship is going to recharge its batteries. And all of a sudden, they come out somewhere else. Basically, the sun was a Stargate in the series. And I thought, I wonder what William Henry would say about this, since he discusses ancient Stargates. Well, anyway, next morning I'm getting ready to open my email to start sending requests to people to do the show that week. And the first email that comes that day comes from William Henry, and it says, Mel, I would love to come on your show to discuss ancient Stargates. And that's when I thought, coincidences are not a fact, synchronicities. And I told them the story. I mean, I needed to know about Stargates. And he told me that it's a reality. They exist not only on planet Earth, but everywhere else. And think of going to the movie theater or to go to a hotel. The first thing you do is identify where or locate the exits in case there's a fire. So I asked him, if there's a cataclysm coming to planet Earth or an asteroid, extinction level event, shouldn't we be identifying those exits? And he said that he went to a conference years ago, a 2012 conference, and when he presented this theory, everybody laughed at him, saying, you know, what Kool-Aid are you drinking? But in reality, I think stargates, call them wormholes, call them whatever you like, I think they were placed here for a reason.
Definitely. Well, I mean, if anyone, well, you're in Arizona, I mean, you've probably experienced some of the energetic, just being, if you go up to Sedona or different areas that are very strong, even if you're up in northern Arizona, you can't dispute the energy fields that you can feel. I don't think anyone can not say they don't feel something when they're in different areas of Arizona.
Absolutely. I went to Sedona a couple of weeks ago, and I've been in Arizona since late 1996. So I'm embarrassed to say that I've never been to Sedona or the Grand Canyon. But finally, the universe presented the opportunity for me to go to Sedona to a conference. So I was there. As I'm driving, approaching Sedona, I got this headache. All of a sudden, I hardly have any headaches, but my whole body felt weird. And it lasted for about a day or two. And I think it's because my body was adapting to the energy levels that you find in Sedona.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty powerful. But now, have you been up to the Grand Canyon yet?
No. I plan to go in December with my family.
I'll send you some special spots off record that you'll be able to connect with some pretty powerful stuff.
Sure.
If we just want to say, okay, we accept there's other life form more than likely on and off this planet, meaning that just beyond the human species, within the human species, there's probably a lot of variations, which we can go into a little bit more in depth. What, off of what you've researched and interviewed, would you say would be our greatest benefit to have a more open relationship with these different entities?
I'm going to give you an answer that may not sound as the answer you're looking for, but this is what I always say. If I ever have an opportunity to do an interview, to conduct an interview with an extraterrestrial, my first question would be, what mistakes did your civilization make so that we don't repeat them here? And this is why many people say, Mel, my first year was 99% of the shows I did was basically ET, the ET phenomena, the UFO phenomena, because I think everything else is interconnected. If you're looking for cures, if you're looking for alternative sources of energy, if we cannot find them here, I believe, and here we go again, I'm so ingrained in using the word belief,
I know, heard it on you.
Yes, I know that the answer has to be outside of this planet then, if we're not going to get it here. Because if we have ships here all the time, and it's documented all the time, and I hate to divert for a second, but I remember years ago I was in my office reading a book on ET, and this person came along and said, do you believe that stuff? Really? I never thought that you would be reading this kind of stuff. And I knew the person was a very religious person, and he would be reading the Bible all the time. And I said, you know, you read the Bible. I see you reading the Bible all the time. You're saying if I believe, it's not a matter of believing. There's trace evidence. There are thousands of witnesses. There's sightings every day. Can you show me any proof of what you research? And he got offended and he walked away. My point is that it's always important to look outside the box. And if we are able to have communication, and I've had some people who channel. And I used to have a problem with channeling because how can we differentiate between a dream and somebody who's channeling? How can we differentiate if somebody's being implanted, can we say implanted or downloaded data? The intelligence apparatus has the technology to make you think things that are not true, but they just come to your mind, and all of a sudden, you think they just had a dream. But trying to communicate with extraterrestrials was something that I always wanted. In seventh grade, I'll tell you another story. It was my biology teacher. That one day she said to all the students, today, close your books. You're going to ask me any question you want to ask. And when it was my turn, I said, she was an electrical engineer, by the way. That's why I asked the following question. I said, how can I communicate with extraterrestrials? And everybody in the room said, oh, my God, look at this guy asking this question. And I thought she was going to send me to the principal's office whenever I asked, you know, similar questions. Or if I was doubting what I was listening to about religion, I was always sent to the priest who was saying, don't question. This is the word of God. This is the way it is. But anyway, this teacher said, ask me away. And she said, get a radio, preferably an AM radio that has the AM waves that go farther. Put it between stations where you can hear the white noise, the static, and think and think and think and concentrate. And one day, maybe you'll get the answer you're looking for. So I think there are ways to communicate. This week I'm having David Sarita on the show, who has come up with a machine. He calls it a quantum communication machine that can communicate instantaneously anywhere in the universe. So I know I'm going around in tangents, but I'm just saying that we need to find ways to communicate so we can get knowledge from outside this planet and learn from other more advanced civilizations that are out there.
Right. And, well, with that being said, there are many, there's even just generations that are connected to memories of these fallen societies that actually utilized free technology. But you bring up a good point, differentiating between channeling, if someone's implanted, how do you have discernment within those situations, which does take a lot of discernment, and especially when the government's involved too, because there can be manipulation upon manipulations within their projects, which bridges me to this question. As far as communicating with extraterrestrial life form, have you interviewed beings that have continued documentation of communicating with extraterrestrial life forms, or contact or consistent contact with these life forms? And if so, what has been their messaging from them?
There'll be many messages, but the one thing that I want to make clear, because some people ask me, do you believe in what so-and-so says? And once again, I don't use the word belief, they ask me. There's one camp in the UFO community that says that all extraterrestrials are benevolent. And there's another one that says that they're all malevolent.
Right.
I'm in the middle. I have a hard time coming to the conclusion that everything is positive. We have a positive, we have a negative. Electricity would not work unless there's the positive and the negative, the yin and the yang. So if you go outside of this planet, something tells me that there may be extraterrestrial beings that may be here that probably are the ones who are puppeteering the people in control. And that's why we are who we are, because they're farming us. And there are others out there that are trying to help. So it's very important to discern between both. Because sometimes we hear of the fallen angels, we hear of the angels, we hear of certain gods that are going to come here in a white robe and help us. But how do we know that it's not a ruse? How do we know that they're not trying to convince us to something and then we're entrapped? Some people talk about rapture, and some of the people I've talked to say that indeed this may happen in the future by malevolent extraterrestrials who may offer eternal life and paradise, but in reality what they would be doing is taking you to another planet where you're going to be enslaved some more. And the question is, how do we discern? How do we understand? And what I was saying about the implanting of thoughts, I think I may have been one of those people who has been a recipient of thoughts, because sometimes I listen to some of my interviews after I conduct the interviews, because when I'm talking to the interviewees, I'm so engaged that the information is not being absorbed. I have to listen to them later so that I can get the material just like any of my listeners. And sometimes I listen to myself talk and talk about certain subjects that I'm not even aware of. I'm not proficient, I'm not versed in certain subjects, and I see myself talking about them as if I know it. And the only explanation I have is when I'm interviewing, my head gets so hot. And I, even in a very cold studio, I'm sweating all over the place. And after I'm done, I feel like I forgot everything I said. Almost as if at the time I'm interviewing, I get this, I don't want to call it a ray of light, but something is happening in my brain that allows me to extract information unlike I was able to do before. It's very difficult to explain, Suzanne.
I completely understand. So we, if you talk about that transmission and reception that
yes.
you're connecting to, and that basically, you know, it's funny when we have all these people, especially from, we'll call them black ops, you know, trying to monitor and listen to all these different things. But what you're doing is you're connecting and transmitting information. And, I'll even tell my kids sometimes, all the answers are there. You just have to connect to them.
Right.
So you're tapping in, and obviously, you know, that this is your vessel to hold, to communicate and share information. So it's not surprising, especially with the subject matter, that you are in that fluid state and you're such a beautiful orator. So you're in a samadhi state, so to speak, so the information can flow through. With that experience, as you are just connecting to that, and the experience you even had to lead you to here with great serendipity, would you be willing to entertain the idea that you actually are a transmitter, not just here on this planet, but beyond?
Again, I don't discount any possibilities. Everything to me is possible. And as each week goes by, every interview I do has a meaning to me. I internalize in many ways the information, whether positive or negative. It just makes me more aware. And one of my slogans is don't live in fear, live in awareness. Sometimes I deal with topics that may come across as if I'm trying to incite fear. Absolutely not. Every single interview I do, at the end of every show, I have my ultimate goal with every interview is to provide a solution to a problem. I'm not just discussing problems. I'm just not discussing the news. Somebody says, well, financial collapse will happen. Okay, that's fine, but tell me how to circumvent it. How can people survive it? If there's a cataclysm coming, well, tell me how to possibly, you know, make it better so that people can survive it. That's exactly what I do. And it's important to say it. You do not live in fear, because that's exactly what happens when you turn on the TV. Just turn on the TV one day if you don't watch it. Just go to any of the big news networks. Then start your clock, 60 seconds. Every few seconds, they will convey something that's for you to be in fear. Because when you're in fear, you're stuck in the mud. You cannot move forward. It's two things, fear and division. Those are the two things you see all the time. Republicans versus Democrats, left versus right, Catholics versus Jews versus Muslims. There's always a division. You know, we recently had the Libya situation where Gaddafi was murdered. And some people take offense that I don't think as the Western media. I think, and not to digress, but I think Gaddafi, yeah, he's been there for so many years, but if you ask the local Libyans, and I've talked to some people, one was a Russian person who worked there for 7 years, and I asked, is it true that Libya has such a high literacy rate? Yes. Is it true that medicine and medical care is free? Yes. Education free? Yes. People get their homes, 50% of their homes for free? Yes. And their cars? And yes. So you turn on the media, and all they want is to divide, because when you divide yourself, you don't talk to anybody else. You have your own thoughts, and you don't come to the conclusion that if you sit down with your fellow human beings, you'll find that there's so much in common between everybody that you'll come to the realization that if you unite, you can defeat those who are trying to enslave us.
Right, and well said, and I actually saw someone on Facebook post Gaddafi's corpse, and I actually, he was out of Indonesia and in the poli sci industry. I don't know if he's still in school, but I said, get your facts because you're not doing the research. And that's, we're at humanity is at a point in time where we're afforded the opportunity to do check and balance, to check and balance mainstream media, which pretty much is just taking people on an adrenal rush. Let's freak you out and build you up and build you down. And I've yet to find really a lot of truth in what they're reporting. Yes, to consider the information, maybe to understand the other side, I guess. But even with something like Gaddafi that's happening right now, and if we go to what you said, the dark force and then light and dark, well, I'll just call them, if that's okay.
Sure.
And you being in the middle. Of course, we'd all like to believe that everything's good, but obviously we are not that reflection on this planet because we have war, we have genocide, we starve children. It's hard for me to say that, you know, all human species are good, because then if we all were good, then why do we allow this to happen? And so if we go into the ET parallel and having discernment from the interviews that you've conducted, what would be some red flags for you to have that discernment? Because you mentioned a couple things like, oh, you know, they could come and offer you a better life and then that's the trick. So if in your mind, if you were enticed tomorrow or today or whatever by something that seemed like an ET, what would be some red flags for you for your discernment?
That's a very good question. You know, sometimes I get the childish thought of, can you give me a ride in your ship? That's the instinctual thing that I would always ask. Well, I guess it would be a matter of do I consider the information or do I not? Do I take the risk? I have a wife and a child. And if I ever get one who says, you want to take a ride? I have to think, you know, what if they take me forever? Now, what if somebody says, you want to go with me through the Stargate? Am I going to return? And some people may say, oh, come on, be adventurous and do it. But you have to ground yourself. You have to understand that, you know, we're not islands. We have other people. But if the goal is to learn and to bring this knowledge back in a way that could be disseminated in a safe way, because I can share this with you now, but I've had issues, I want to call it, with the powers that be, that they tried to silence me a few times. And, you know, would I love to go and take a ride and learn from them? Absolutely. But how do we know that I'm not being set up? And some people say to me, you've talked to people who claim they've had extraterrestrial contact. How do you know that they're not being planted by the powers that want to be to misinform? And the truth is, that's possible. But again, we have to consider it. But yes, you know, some of the topics that I deal with during my first year, they don't even have to be the ET topic. But I remember dealing with the Federal Reserve. Not even 2 days later, I started receiving letters from my banks. I have businesses, and I need lines of credit in order to operate during seasonal fluctuations. All of a sudden, even though my credit score is perfect, they started cutting all my lines. And I went to my bank. And I know the manager. I've known her for years. And I said, hey, you know, I want to know about all these letters. And she looked at them, puzzled, and said, what? That doesn't make any sense. She went to her computer. I don't know if she saw a code, but her face changed. And she says, well, I can't give you an answer. But, you know, yep, they're all closed. And not even 2 days later, they relocated her somewhere else. So they cut all my lines, almost as if saying, you need to shut up. You should not go there. You should not talk about this or that subject. And that gave me more force. That gave me more life force to even go forward. Then, again, this is 2009. 2010, I went to the International UFO Congress. And there were two young men there who wanted to hang out with us all the time. I joined a group there of friends who listened to the show, and these two guys wanted to hang out with us all the time, and they gave me a bad vibe. They were playing naive, but you could see them in corners talking to each other very seriously. One night, we went sky watching, and they wanted to hang out with me and to ask me questions, and I basically said, hey, you know, I'm busy right now. I can't talk to you. I shook their hands. They shook my hand, actually, and we never saw them again. The next day, almost everybody in my group developed some kind of pneumonia. Everybody got sick. I didn't, but about a week or two later, I for some reason, couldn't sleep. Every time I was breathing, the left side of my chest would hurt. And after 2 or 3 days of not sleeping, I came home from work. I dialed my insurance company to talk to the nurse, and I said, you know, I wonder if it's acid reflux or what it is, but every time I breathe, you know, the left side of my chest hurts, and I can't sleep, because every time I fall asleep, the pain would you know, flare up. And she said, hang up your phone and call 911 immediately. Immediately. And I said, what? Yes. So I called 911. I had about 12 paramedics here, my house. They took me in a gurney, nitrile under my tongue. They took me to a heart hospital. And I said to the doctor, why am I at a heart hospital? I think this is acid reflux. And he said, no, it's your heart. I got a virus in the pericardium, which is the sac that surrounds my heart. I was there for a couple of days, you know, gave some medication, and I was fine after, but then the pain started coming. And speaking of alternative health, I have a product called MMS. You probably have heard about it. I took it after the pain was coming back. I didn't tell anybody. And in less than 24 hours, finally, the pain was completely gone. But some people say that, you know, my group, they got pneumonia. They got something in their lung. What was intended for me didn't go to my lung. It went to my heart. So, yes, there are people out there. Some people call them men in black. Some people say that it could be they may use, you know, electric waves to do that, to implant thoughts in you or in your body and create cancer. I don't know if you know who Dr. Fred Bell is. He died recently. I find it a little bit questionable of the information that he shares. All of a sudden, this vegetarian man who was completely healthy goes to see Jesse Ventura to do a show. As he's leaving the hotel, collapses and dies. So you have to be very careful, indeed.
Well, and this is where the practice of meditation can come in very handy to sharpen the Jedi skills just to deal with those energies. And if we even talk about a little bit about the esoteric side of it, you know, in some teachings, this is all an illusion. So if we look at, if we're trying to even use, speaking of getting out of the matrix, of one matrix, and, you know, maybe it's getting out of another one.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, when I did my first year of these shows, they were basically ET, because that was my passion. Mm. However, then I spoke to Robert Morningsky, who he did the influx of spirituality. Then I met a lady with the name of Crystal Clark, who started opening my eyes into other things. J.J. Hertak and his wife, we did another show, and I thought, wait a minute, I really like this information. And the ET and spirituality, consciousness, esotericism is all interlinked. And that's really started opening the doors for me into other realms that I, bear in mind, Catholic all my life. If anybody talked to you about spirituality, they would frown, you would be frowned upon. So that wall was still there, and I didn't even know it. And that's when I conducted a poll recently with the 8 topics that we discussed. And I really didn't think that esoteric would get so many votes, but it came to number one, spirituality and consciousness, followed by ET, followed by hidden history and archaeology. So it's almost as if the universe is telling us that people want answers and they're not happy with what they're getting in the mainstream. And when I'm saying mainstream, I think of religion, I think of government, I think of mainstream media. So people are looking elsewhere for answers. The problem is that with the advent of the internet, you have to be ever more careful.
Right.
Because now everybody's connected, yes, but there's COINTELPRO. They insert their own agents out there.
Oh, yeah.
When you discuss something, they put somebody out there who starts, you know, if you go to a forum, you know the forum sliders. You know the people who go out there and defy what you're saying with alleged scientific proof. You know what I mean?
Right. Definitely. I can spot them. They kind of amuse me. But
yeah.
And I think that's why people are craving, because the illusion is dropping. It's hard to, like you said, if you are saying, well, show me the facts, even if you're talking about religious facts, I think when I was raised, evolution was completely omitted, you know, and if you don't tell kids about dinosaurs, prehistoric times, and they're thinking that it all started out with Christianity, you know, that's a huge gap you're leaving out for a young mind to develop and ponder and to think about. So then they don't completely have a full picture. And right now we're realizing that even all those quote-unquote truths were fabricated too on some level. So we're finding out more and more information. So with your connectivity to all the ET phenomena and the need to communicate, because I feel the reason I was just even guided to say we're going to dive into this further and further, so I'm going to keep pushing the envelope with it, is that we're coming upon a period where people's minds are going to be blown away, whether it's religion, whether it's economy, whether it's health, where it's the reveals. We've been leading up to it, and everyone that's been committed to showing people, but many people can't get their mind around it because it's a lot to take in, especially if you have to take it in really rapidly, like how many years you've been at this and had the time to digest it and piece by piece. But imagine a lot of people in the very near future, their minds are going to be shattered. How do you feel that you can help be that bridge so people have somewhere to go? And how do you feel that you might be able to synthesize some of the information that you've gathered so they maybe not have to connect to every little piece of it? Are you willing to hold that torch? And what do you think you have to offer in that moment?
Well, I do it involuntarily, I guess, and I've discussed this with our mutual friend, Cliff High, and he also hates the word believe. I remember during my first interview with him, I said, Cliff, do you believe in this or that? And that was Cliff High 101, or Webbutt 101 to me, when he says, don't use the word believe because the connotation is intent. Yeah. So I don't ask people to believe. I want people to know when they listen to me or to my guest, because that's why they listen. I want them to not believe a word. Just do your own research. And the way I see it is, we have hundreds of thousands of a jigsaw puzzle pieces on the floor. And every time I do an interview, my goal is to grab one of those pieces and put it on the wall every week. So that one day when I'm ready to leave this plane, I'm able to look at that wall and say, I think I got it. I think I got most of it. And nobody's forcing me. I go out there and listen to the most outrageous stories and stories that people say, how dare you interview that person? You know, don't you question the credentials? And that's when I say, just because somebody has a double or a triple PhD from academia, does that really give them any validity? They learned that from the establishment. Now, how about a person who never went to college and learn how to be a guitar virtuoso, and then started looking at the esoteric material, and look at the Nakamadi, and read every single religious book around the world, and started connecting dots? Am I not supposed to consider that as well? That's part of it. We need to consider everything in order for us to be able to connect the dots. But just to give you another example, I've observed the sun. And once again, going back to Cliff, we have talked about this extensively. The sun is changing. I recently found out that our DNA operates like miniature laser beams, that when they interact with light, they react. So if the sun reacts and we react to the sun, could it be that chemtrails are here to cover the sun on days when the sun is active? Could the sun be the one that is helping us? We use the word ascension to help us ascend. Recently, there were two young Russian scientists who won the Nobel Prize in Science, and they discovered that carbon 12 is transmuting into carbon 7 with light, with the sun. In other words, carbon 12, which we are almost carbon 12, if carbon 12 is transmuting into carbon 7, and they call the new mineral, call it a mineral if you will, they call it ascentium with a T. So if this is transmuting, something tells me that a lot of the answers lie with the sun and the chemtrails. If you look at the history of the chemtrails, a lot of the times they're only covering populated areas. If you look at the satellite, you don't see the chemtrails. They're saying, oh, this is just to help with global warming. That's malarkey. Look at the satellite pictures and you'll see that open water. You'll never see the chemtrails. The only times you'll see them is if the chemtrails on open water are being moved with the wind towards populated areas. So yes, look at outside the box. Look at what may be changing you. Be outside in the sun and do some staring to the sun early in the morning, late in the afternoon, and you'll be amazed at what you'll find.
Right. Well, and it, you know, I've watched an instance where the sun started activating and there was an upside down rainbow for about 5 minutes, and literally within 20 minutes there were three planes covering the sun.
There you go.
And
there you
go. And I remember this little kid goes, "No one's noticing that upside down rainbow under the sun." he and I were like, "Yeah, no one looks up, no one notices anything." But the kids all noticed, and they thought it was really odd that they had to see this rainbow that was upside down, and there were no clouds in the sky. That was the thing that was odd for the children.
Absolutely.
So the observation, using that word belief, and that's what we're having. So belief and truth, because it's another word Cliff doesn't like, is truth. But we're bridging worlds where people have operated on trust. You know, they've operated on a belief system, and they basically have to realize or are going to be forced to, with irrefutable evidence, that they've been lied to. And so that's where I was saying, how in your mind do you feel like you can assist that process? Because it's shocking. Like I said, you've been able to move through this at a rate so you could synthesize all the information, put it together, and all your listeners have been able to follow along. But what about the person that just all of a sudden tomorrow gets all this information at once? That's a lot. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. This is shock. It's a shock doctrine if you were to be able to do that. And I've had this conversation with so many researchers. I used to be the one who would want to wake people up all the time. And it was Michael Tsarian. You may know who he is. Mm-hmm. And we had a conversation about 2 years ago. And I said, "Michael, this is what happens to me. What do you suggest?" And he said, "Do you realize that you may be attempting to change someone's destiny, the predetermined destiny, by trying to wake him up? Some people are meant to be asleep. And when you try to wake him up, you may be changing their destiny." I don't subscribe to that point of view. My point of view is, I'll do what I do. If anybody cares to listen, great. If they don't want to listen, great. If they want to turn on Fox News or CNN, have at it. And this is the issue that I face. It's almost as if when I'm doing a show, I have an alter ego. As a matter of fact, some people know that I have two Facebook accounts. I have my Veritas, my real life, let's call it, because this to me is real. And then I have my personal life Facebook account with my friends from college and school and family. And I don't discuss any of these subjects. For example, last week I posted a show that I did with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny about vaccines, putting wealth before health. I put it there. Nobody even cared about listening. Everybody looks at me as, you're just a lunatic. You believe in UFOs. You think that people should not go to doctors. They should go and find other alternative ways of health. So I keep those separate. I went to a dinner on Monday night after taking our daughter to trick-or-treat. And there was this lady there who started talking about how pornography is everywhere now. You know, kids have access to pornography and the internet and TV and this and that. And she's an ultra Catholic. I could not help myself. That day, I researched a newsworthy item where it was found that the largest pornography company in Germany is owned 100% by the Vatican. And I said, I told her, "Did you know this?" And she goes, "That's not true. That cannot be true. I don't believe that." That's what I get from everybody. And then I explain how I saved my dog with MMS. I was taking my dog to the doctor to be euthanized, and the thought came to my mind saying, wait, try MMS, see if you can save your dog. And I did. And I told this friend of ours who's pursuing her double PhD, And I said, yeah, it was cured by this and that. And she said, I don't believe it. So people who live in the matrix are very difficult to sway. So the only thing you can do is what Gandhi says, be the change you want to see in the world. That's all I can do.
Right.
If people see that I'm never sick and that my family's never sick, when everybody's sick, they'll start asking questions. Like, how is it that, you know, we get the flu vaccine and we're all sick all the time and you never get vaccines and you're never sick? Or you're learning this and you're learning that. Fine. If you want to listen to what I have to say, here's the information. And this is what transcends. This is what is making Veritas and many other shows out there. This is what, you know, Cliff High gets attacked every so often because, you know, one or two of what the webbot says did not come true. But then all of a sudden, it comes true later. And some of the things that he has been saying, just all you have to do is look at this year and listen to all the interviews we did a couple of years ago. Yeah. A lot of the things that people thought would never happen, the Arab Spring, the people in the Occupy Wall Street, which, by the way, I find, and people who are listening to me who may be part of the Wall Street, the Occupy Wall Street, please don't get offended. But I think they're playing with you. We should not be occupying Wall Street. We should be occupying the culprit, which is the Federal Reserve. And George Soros is all over it. There's one side of the political spectrum that's really leading you. Same thing with 9/11. Lenin said it best. The best way to lead control the opposition is to lead it ourselves. And that's why a lot of the times and a lot of the interviews I do are with people that are never listened to. Take Dr. Judy Wood as an example. When I interviewed her, nobody wanted to give her light of day. I said, wait a minute, but this is somebody with all the bona fides. She has a PhD in mechanical engineering. She was a professor at Clemson. Why are they not listening? So now my conversations with Jay Whitener, we always say the same thing. When they tell you to look left, look to the right. When they say something is wrong, it may be right. When they tell you something is bad, it's probably good. That's the mindset that I have now, and this is what's resonating with a lot of my listeners.
Yeah, me too. It's opposite game.
Yes.
You remember that game, I'm sure. So in being open-minded and providing all this information, what do you feel has been the most worldview shifting information that you've received that has really altered the way that you are living in this current moment?
That's a very tough question. But I can say that my paradigm really shattered after 9/11. Because at the time, I just thought that our well-intended government really meant well for everybody and they would never do anything to harm us. And I never thought that they were the ones who were controlling our lives. And once you start looking into the rabbit hole, as I call it, every week I open a door. And I thought that I knew a lot before I started my program. Now I realize how much I didn't know. Every week when I open a door, 10 doors open behind it. And if it's frustrating because instead of answering questions, let's say I have 20 questions for one show. After the show is over, now I have 200. And this is a multiplying effect every single week. And it's frustrating sometimes to realize that we indeed live in an illusion. And the movie The Matrix was not fiction after all. This is exactly what we go through day in and day out. And when you start leaving The Matrix, and I always mention the movie, I don't know if you ever watched the movie Midnight Express from the 70s, but this American person who was dealing hashish was in prison in Turkey, and then he was sent to an insane asylum part of the jail, and he was not crazy, but all the crazy people were walking around counterclockwise, and then he decided one day that he was not going to do that anymore, so he started walking clockwise or counterclockwise, opposite to everybody. And all the crazies were just grabbing him and saying, no, you have to walk with us. And that's when he was taken out of that facility. This is exactly what happens to me. This is exactly what happens to most of my listeners after they listen to a few shows. They're walking against the herd, and they stick out like sore thumbs. And this is the biggest challenge that we all face, that when we go to a We go to a family or a social gathering, and people start talking about politics or start talking about mainstream stuff. We cannot help but to bring the newfound knowledge. And it's very difficult when you have 99% of a crowd just be programmed with what they're being told, and you are out of that group thinking what the real truth and what reality is. That is the biggest challenge. And to everybody, you ask me which is the most revealing thing, try to seek those who think like you in this regard, people who are on the same path, people who are seeking enlightenment, not by your subliminal tube, by other means. Find out what the media is telling you, and you'll find out that lies are everywhere. So try to find those groups. I don't have that many people that I can, you know, truly call my friends, because I am tired of being part of that matrix. I'm out seeking my own truth and my own journey. So if I had to just give anybody any advice, it would be that. Listen to everything and then discern.
Yeah, definitely. And within that, if we look at, you know, we talk a little bit about, are you familiar with John Lash's mythos?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So if I just don't want to jump in and use some of the terminology from that. So the archonic energy, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, because I have a gift set of being able to see it within people and around people. Would you, from anyone that you've interviewed, if you parallel that mythos with the archonic energy being on the planet, and you talked a little bit just even with a parallel with Midnight Express and the people, you know, walking in the opposite directions, if we in fact are embedded not only with ETs that, you know, are concerned for humanity, but also with ETs that are controlling maybe the majority of the system right now and they need to leave the planetary system or this planet, have you found any research that would kind of support that energy being present and then the need for eradication of the energy, almost like getting rid of the flu?
Very good question. John Lash is a good friend, and he sent me an email the other day regarding one of my guests, because he has very strong views about certain things. But yeah, the term Archon that he comes up with, I cannot say enough about it, because it is true. It is almost like a virus. And do I know for a fact that this is true? No, but it's something that I need to consider, because if you think about it, only a few people control the wealth of the planet. And just like the Russians during the Soviet era were told, you better behave or we're going to come and get you. But when you realize that they only have a few goons out there and people could rise up and take care of them, that's the attitude, because that's why they have the division and the fear. I keep repeating those two things. Fear, because when you're in fear, you don't move forward. Oh my God, I need my paycheck. Oh, unemployment, it is running out. I have to depend on the government to survive. And I have to say, and this may offend some people, but I have to tell you, my family, they're political exiles. They came from Cuba to Spain, back into Puerto Rico, and that's where I grew up. The lesson I got from my parents, who had absolutely nothing, was don't ever depend on anyone to survive. And if you want to call it the government, that's fine, but depend on yourself. Equip yourself to always survive. So when I get a lot of people who email me saying, Mel, I lost my job, what do I do? I tell them, don't despair, because that's the part of it. You know, they're trying to keep people in fear, all the unemployment. Try to find, and I hate to go in tangents, but I have to just give these messages that come to me right now.
Perfect.
You need to write down those attributes that you have. In my case, I'm a business owner. I suffered the economy as like everybody else. And when you're self-employed and the economy hits you, that's even worse, because you have families who work for you, who depend on you. And that's when the whole Veritas world came along. And now it's my new profession, who save us and save a lot of the families that work for me. So find those attributes that you have. All right. Don't just because you work for a company in a printing press, or you worked in the in a law office or whatever. You have something inside of you that's needed out there. Find what's needed, put it on a piece of paper, and create something. Don't depend on an employer to save you. You can do it. You can do it yourself, and you can rise up, and guess what? It may be the opportunity that you always look for. Sometimes adversity is what brings you to the next level, and that's exactly what happened to me ever since I was a child. Again, my parents said to me, and I've never shared this story, look, we just immigrated. We're working very hard. You have two choices. We can live in a nice house, and you go and go to public schools, and where I come from, you don't want to go to a public school. Or we can give you a private education, but you won't have all the perks that all the kids that go to school with you will have. But they chose that. They gave me the gift of education. And ever since I was a child, instead of walking around with a chip on my shoulder because, you know, I had friends whose parents would drive them to school with a Lamborghini, I would say, no, one day I'll get out of this. And I was able to get out of it. I've fought very hard. I worked very hard for everything I have. And anybody who's listening can do it too. And I didn't mean to digress, but I'm just giving these pointers to everybody who may be feeling hopeless right now, that there's no reason to feel hopeless and fear or divided.
Of course, definitely. And I think right now, even with the movements going on, what I'm hoping to inspire people to do is to start to have conversations and organize. I sent an email out earlier trying to connect dots between some entities that could really do something rather than just sit by and watch all of this happen. And really, all we have to do is reorganize. This, we do not have to be dependent on any world government or any world currency at all. It's that simple. So your words are very sagely and timely. So if we acknowledge that we are embedded with archonic energy, meaning that they are not humans in the sense of have emotional skill sets to feel love, compassion, sympathy for other beings. So meaning that they would not be able to even care about anyone. They don't care if children are starving. They don't care if there's a war. All they care about is self,
yeah,
or the ego, if people want to relate to it that way. So in your mind's eye, if you're directing this, what would you do?
Well, first of all, I think just as we humans, you know, I hate to say it, but I'm not a vegetarian. I like to eat my steak. But we like to eat, some of us like to eat meat, fish, etc. They may really grow with our energy. And I've heard this many times. I'm coming to some conclusions. I don't have the facts. But every century we've had wars. Almost unexplainable. I mean, we have World War I, World War II, and then all the, you know, Korea, Vietnam, now the personal Gulf once again. And something tells me that they are part of the, what we call cabal, because whenever somebody dies, that energy that comes out of the suffering, they feed from that. And the same thing happens, you know, Africa. Africa has so many resources. They could kill poverty so quickly, but they have been raped by the Western world. You know, before, the tribes would live in peace. They were divided by rivers. But when the Europeans came and they started putting lines of demarcation between countries, all the rivers, now there were not the lines, and they mixed all the tribes. That's why there's so much civil war. There's so much the sects, that the tribalism and the wars between them, and they starved them, they raped them, they took all the resources. If anybody saw the movie Blood Diamond, it's just one example. You have Cecil Rhodes, who pilfered the whole one area of Africa. He even got his own country, Rhodesia, and now he's the Rhodes Scholarship. Instead of just sanctifying people, then in reality what they did was rape the world. We need to start switching our mindset. Some people say to me, you know, a few weeks ago we had Columbus Day. You know, when you're growing up, you think, oh, Columbus, he discovered America. What a great man. You know, all for the kingdom and all to bring Catholicism to the new world. But as you evolve and as you grow older, you realize he discovered from who? Who did we have the who we, if they had to really implement immigration law, it should be the native and the indigenous people of this part of the world, and they should kick everybody out, including myself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, change your paradigm, change the world views, and you start seeing the world the way it should be.
We're going to take a break right here. Check back for the next episode with Mel and I. He will share more of his sagely advice, his experiences, and you can connect with him in the meantime at veritasradio.com, and that is veritasradio.com. He has wonderful interviews, a wonderful community, so be sure to dive into his work, and we look forward to continuing the conversation. Until the next time, this is Suzanne, and we're going to sign out with The Riddle by Random Rab.
I got derelict faith, coming on strong, laying down the riddle, holding me down, whistling death, holding my breath, till until the sun has burned in my chest. We ain't got no time, so let yourself go, circling life in the devil's flow. We ain't got no time, so let yourself go, circling death in the devil's flow. I got derelict faith, coming on strong, laying down the riddle, holding me down, whistling death, hold my breath, here until the sun has burned my chest. We ain't got no time, so let yourself go, circling life in the devil's flow. We ain't got no time, so let yourself go, circling death in the devil's flow.